Mr. Mason, Real 7. So, we'll talk about December. You're based at Bleeder. What's the next mission you remember?
Well, after this, we went on with convoy escorts and anti-submarine sweeps. Nothing very exciting happening. We nearly attacked one of our own submarines.
Tell us the story of that.
Well, they always have... you have a safe area. If one of your own submarines is out, there's a safe area and you don't attack anything in that area. But this one wasn't in the area. I mean, you can understand it. If you've been touring around Italy for the last 3 weeks and mostly underwater, the navigation is not all that easy. But fortunately, they, you know, lit flares, fired off colours and all sorts of things just as we dived down on them, so we didn't do any damage to them. And that went on through December. One or two interesting escorts, the SS Cameronia in tow, that had been damaged, and the one on the cruiser Ajax, which had been damaged, and the Wilde Strasbourg. The cruiser Ajax was very unlucky. It was bombed and a bomb went down its funnel and blew up in the engine room, which was rather unfortunate. Then I noticed on the 10th of January we did a special sweep to prevent possible attack on Bougie Harbour by human torpedoes. This must have been something they picked up possibly through Enigma or whatever, but they were expecting an attack by...
Which harbour? Bougie?
B-O-U-G-I-E.
That's not Algeria, is it?
Yes. It's east of Algiers. We didn't see any, so that it didn't develop. Interesting thing was that we saw three Italian planes. They're torpedo bombers, SM-79s, and Tubby was not very good on aircraft recognition, and we were flying along and he saw that they were on his side. He saw these three airplanes flying and he turned to me and said, where do you think those Dakotas have been? Because we saw a lot of Dakotas used to fly along the coast. They used to follow the coast, taking supplies up. And so I had a look and said, "Well, they're not Dakotas; they're Italian." At which he said, "Oh dear, you know, And he turned sharply away. But on the other hand, they must have thought that we were a bowfighter or something because we were flying steadily towards them, and they turned away and went home as well. So we put them off. Then on the 12th of January we did an escort, and when we landed the undercarriage collapsed, and again we were lucky because if an undercarriage strut breaks on a Hudson, it's very likely to catch fire because there's a strut goes straight up into a petrol tank. But fortunately, both of our wheels went, and so the struts went straight back and missed the petrol tank. So we were rather lucky. I don't know why they collapsed. I expect Tubby probably landed a bit too high or something. We went on, and One thing I haven't mentioned, which is of interest probably, that the day after the landings, one of our aircraft was painted in Vichy colours and flew General Giraud to Algiers. And they offered it him to keep, but he decided it would be more use to him, to us than him, and so it came back again.
So what's next in January 43?
I'm going on odd note. I made notes of these things when I happened to fly in it later. And so this went on. Without a lot of change, we did. By now, the situation had obviously calmed down, and we did almost continual sweeps. We did very few escorts because the best thing to do was to keep sweeping the convoy route continually as a better way of keeping it clear than having to keep putting aircraft around convoys, because there were a lot of convoys going backwards and forwards. Though we did did convoy escorts when there was something particular, like those damaged ships, for example. And then on the 23rd of February, I was on a U-boat hunt. They had found a U-boat, they'd picked up a U-boat, and it had sat on the bottom, and they put four destroyers over it and waited for it to move, and we had to go out so that they knew that if it did move, it would have to come up pretty soon, because it'd been there about 48 hours. And so we were to fly around and keep an eye open should it get away from the destroyers and come up away from them. But anyway, the destroyers actually destroyed it.
What day was that?
That was the 23rd of February.
And you don't know the number of the submarine, do you?
No idea. And so we went on, sweeps, occasional escorts.
Did you find you were getting more nervous as you've been doing it for quite a long time, or did it get easier or worse?
No, I think the weather got quite good there, and I mean, we hadn't got a lot to worry about, because we didn't get much interference by aircraft. We occasionally got we were followed over the coast one night when we were coming back by a German night fighter. They were coming over from the south of France. They couldn't spend a lot of time around, and they were put off because within about within 10 miles of Blida, the Atlas Mountains start, and it goes up to about 5,000 feet. And the first time they raided the aerodrome, one of their bombers flew straight into the mountainside, and I think that put them off a bit. And then, of course, rather than bomb the aerodrome, they tended to go for Algiers, and by now the night fighters had got their radar, and they were able to go up and chase them, and did fairly well. I think they used to lose quite a few aircraft and got a bit doubtful about coming.
So what's next?
And little change until on the 2nd of April I was told my tour was finished and I was going home.
Did you have an end of tour party? Did they have that sort of thing, a big party when someone went home?
I don't I don't think we got around much to a party. I expect we had a bit of one, but the place wasn't very conducive to parties. I mean, we hadn't got much of a mess there, and no beer. You know, it was sort of gin and I don't know, lemon mostly, I say. But I don't drink gin, so I had a fairly clean life while I was
there. Now, where were you going back to?
So, we were very fortunate in that we were given an aeroplane to bring back to England.
Was this Enzo came back with you? Or?
Yes, yes. Flew to Gibraltar on the 3rd of April, then from Gibraltar to Gosport on the 4th. We were taking this aircraft back to Gosport, to the maintenance unit. Of course, although it was a transit flight, it was an operational flight because we carried depth charges, because you never knew your luck. You might see a U-boat on your way either to Gibraltar or from Gibraltar to the UK. And so I was then posted to number one coastal OTU at Thornaby.
Operational training unit, is it?
Yes, as an instructor.
A navigation instructor?
No, much against my wishes, I was posted there as a bombing instructor. Which, in fact, I objected to. Having been squadron navigation officer, I now intended to follow a navigation career, I hoped. Anyway, it...
Were you able to do bombing? Were you still up enough in bombing?
Oh, yes. You were still, you know, I was still supposed to be... although, in the in anti-U-boat... work, you didn't, the observer didn't drop the bombs, the pilot did, because there was no such thing as a low level bomb sight, and you dropped the depth charges from 50 feet. And so the standard drill was the pilot, he had a spot on the front of the aircraft. When he saw the U-boat disappear under there, he dropped the depth charges, and that was the only way you could do it. You could only do it by eye.
So what were you trained in to be as bombing instructor? You weren't there long, were you?
But no, I was only there for about a week. I would have been, you know, looking after... I did a couple of flights on practice bombing. I would just sort of go and watch the fella and make sure he did things properly. At the end of April, there were two. The important thing was that I'd planned to get married at the end of May, and all this was being set afoot, and so. At the end of April, the Ministry of Supply asked for somebody who had just come back from North Africa to go and talk to war workers. And I was told that that would be a suitable job for me to do. And so I had about a month of talking to war workers.
Whereabouts? I mean,
about the anti-U-boat war, and the theme was avoid waste of metals, because they all had to be brought in, and you know, every bit of metal you wasted was a seaman gone, sort of thing. And it was a very interesting experience. I've spent a while in the London area and then went up to Nottingham. And finished up in my hometown, I was asked to go and help the local Perkins Diesels, who was setting up a Wings for Victory exhibition. And they had got, you know, crates of bits of equipment, most of which meant absolutely nothing to them at all. And so I was able to go and live at home for a week and set this thing up. You know, things like a bomb rack with practice bombs on, and, you know, if you bought a pound's worth of saving stamps, you could press the button and see them drop through a hole in the table. So that was a month's holiday, really. And then I got married and had some leave and went back to Thornaby in the middle of June. And fortunately, on the 5th of July, I was posted to 302 FTU, which is Ferry Training Unit, which was at Oban. This unit, what they did was they had experienced pilots who flew over to the States, picked up a new Catalina with a newly trained crew, and then flew the Catalina back to Oban. And then we checked out the crew. The pilot of the crew would be become a second pilot, and an experienced pilot would be given the aircraft with the newly trained crew. And then the Catalina and crew would be sent to wherever they wanted one. Like, you know, they would go from Oban to Ceylon, or Gibraltar, or wherever, West Africa, or wherever a squadron was waiting for a new crew and aircraft. And that was...
And what exactly were you doing within that?
Well, I was basically on ground instruction, although I went on the odd flight for experience.
So you were instructive in navigation?
Yes, yes. What they did, they did three or four long navigational exercises, so that the crew could sort of, you know, bed down, and the pilot, the captain that had been given the crew, could sort them out and decide whether he's happy with them. And then they'd be sent on their way. But I flew on one on the 27th of September, and I decided not to do it anymore because the pilot put the aircraft into a spin, and if you can imagine a Catalina, which is a high-winged monoplane in a spin, it goes around very, very slowly and very uncomfortably, and this thing dropped from about 8,000 feet to about 1,500 feet. But just about decided, I was in the back of the thing at the time, and I just about decided that in a minute there was going to be a big bang. But fortunately, the pilot got it out of the spin by putting both feet on one side of the rudder bar, which he bent, but he got it out. And so I confined myself for the next 3 months to ground training. Then I'd applied for a staff navigator's course, which was being run at Shawbury. This was the pre-war navigation course. It used to be 12 months. It had been cut down to 6, and I'd applied for this, and The Coast Command wanted every squadron to have a staff navigator as navigation officer. And so I'd applied for this course, but...
When was this then? This would be in February, would it?
Yes, but I was posted to 58 Squadron, the Halifax Squadron at St David's in Wales, on the 8th of February. But as soon as I got there, the thing came through to say that I'd got this course. So on the 27th of February, I was off to Shawbury.
So what do you remember of the course?
Sorry?
What do you remember of the course?
Well, it's pretty intensive. Flew around in Wellingtons on navigational exercises and looking at March, I see you did something like one a week, and these were
fairly. What kind of thing were they?
Sorry?
What sort of navigational exercises?
Well, you'd fly most of them to somewhere like St Kilda, Rathlin Island, Rockall, Shawbury is by Shrewsbury, so you go out into the Irish Sea and then up into the Atlantic for places like Rathlin's off Northern Ireland, and then Rockall's out in the Atlantic, and St Kilda. And these, and as I say, looking at it, you did about one of these a week, but you had a great deal of...
was there any new equipment you were in?
Of groundwork. The groundwork, you know, consisted all sorts of instruments, meteorology, all sorts of navigation, astro navigation, radar, and it was pretty strong mathematically. You did spherical trigonometry and such like, which was, you know, a bit hard if you out of the blue, and it was a very intensive. It was very hard work. You had one day off a week, and it was really, I suppose, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 at night on classroom days, and the standard was pretty high because all your pupils were ex-operational pods, so they'd all had a fair amount of experience.
Sorry, I should have asked, CNS stands for?
Central Navigation School.
Sorry, yeah. So what happened next then? You were there till June?
I was there till June, and then when the course ended, the last flight I did was interesting there. On the 11th of May, this was the last flight, they asked us to do a trial of map reading. It says trial of map reading exercise. This was in preparation for D-Day. We were all sent off in Wellingtons to fly around the UK. I see we went to somewhere in Suffolk, over to Abingdon, then to Tewkesbury, back to Huntingdon, then to Leicester, and back to Shawbury, and we could fly as low as we liked, which the Air Force didn't allow very often.
And what was the purpose of this?
The purpose was to give an assessment of the best methods of map reading at low level. This was intended for fighter pilots who would be going over to France flying at low level, and they hoped to put together all our comments and make some sort of recommendations as to things to look for. And of course there are obvious things like churches, rivers, but it was a very entertaining day, I, as you can imagine. I know I can remember a fellow somewhere near Huntingdon leaping 3 feet in the air from a sitting position in a deck chair when we went over him, and an American in a flying fortress who took off from one of the Northamptonshire aerodromes, and we were following the river, and when he took off we were underneath him as he came off the aerodrome on the hill. And that's, I bet he complained to somebody. So that was fine, and at the end of the course, we all had to go to Coast Command headquarters to be told our postings by the command navigation officer, who was a group captain, Richardson, who was the fellow who had written the RAF navigation manual. And he... I think I must have been about the last, because when it got to me, he took me into the operations room and he said, well, you know it's not far away, and there is the map, and you can see by the PRU things, you know, that is pretty active. And he said, your posting is back to 58 Squadron as the Squadron Navigation Officer. Here are the orders for 58 Squadron and 502 Squadron, which shared the aerodrome, which you can take to save us sending them by dispatch rider. And sort of off you go.
So you joined them in St. David's?
And so off I went to St. David's. Oh, the other thing was, he said, as you will work out the patrols they have to do, and you will you have the complete picture. You mustn't fly for a fortnight, you know, in case of things going wrong. So off I went to St. David's, and we then prepared the things. The plan for D-Day was this sort of interlocking patrols right from the French coast out to the to Southern Ireland, which was called Operation Cork. The idea being that it bottled up the channel, and every inch of sea would be seen at least every half an hour. And so you had a whole load of patrols with aircraft all going around them at the same speed. And then you had what they called rover aircraft, who were loitering about off the coast. If an aircraft saw a U-boat, it attacked it if it could. And the rover aircraft would... It wouldn't stop its patrol, it would go on with its patrol, and the rover aircraft would go and hover over wherever it was. So that it wasn't until the 13th of June was the first time I flew.